Hi, this is Luke Dimion, and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
He plays one of history's most vilified figures.
I'm ready to do hard things.
Well, in that case, Judas, follow me.
Egyptian-American actor Luke Dimion stars as Judas in the global phenomenon The Chosen. All 8 episodes of season 5 exploded into theaters as a special 3-part event, grossing more than $140 million worldwide and now streaming on Amazon Prime. The 28-year-old actor's nuanced performance as the most misunderstood disciple has captivated audiences everywhere, transcending expectations in a role both iconic and complex. Dimion visited our studios recently to tell us all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with Luke Dimion.
The show in itself has just been such a fun place to learn and to grow as a performer, like just with so many other fantastic actors around me. And as the show grew itself, we started a very small production. We weren't on any network or streaming service, and now we're on Prime Video. And seeing the trajectory the show has taken and being with these amazing performers, these fantastic actors who deserve all the accolades that they're getting, it's such a wonderful experience. And it's more like the preparation has been happening to me as we continue than anything that I could have been prepared for. I did what any actor did, auditioned to the best of my ability, and I guess that was enough. Because after an initial audition for season 1 where they were like, nah, and another audition for season 2 where they were also like, nah, but they eventually reached out to my representation and they asked specifically if I could audition for the part of The Apprentice. But also in that same email was like, The Apprentice is Judas. Could you actually audition for Judas? In that mind, I was like, yeah, I could do that. And I guess I gave off the Judas quality that they were looking for. And so they cast me.
I do believe that Jesus is most likely the Messiah.
Then why are you doing this?
I suppose I have not seen enough.
I always kind of joke around, I was like, I don't know if I would have done the show if I wasn't getting to play Judas. I feel like that's like the epitome role, like it's an actor's dream of just a full meal of complexities. And he's such an interesting character to, one, attach himself so fervently to Jesus's mission and ministry, and then somewhere along the line he betrays him, whether it's a lack of faith or maybe a misunderstanding of faith. Like it's such a complicated situation that as a performer, I was like, oh no, I think I won. I got the character to play or to have fun with, so I'm content.
Rabbi, do what you came to do.
I've had a lot of people compare Judas's story to themselves, like, yes, we've all betrayed the Lord, and for less. And I'm like, I don't think that's the point. I feel like Judas's story isn't a lesson or reflection on the worst of ourselves. I think it's just who we are. His main lesson isn't the betrayal of Jesus. Heck, Peter betrays him the very same night. Betrayal is a very natural thing. I think it's the abject of how we view ourselves after we've committed, in our heads, our worst deeds. Like, what do we do after that? And learning to not only look past it, but to forgive ourselves, to allow ourselves to grow past our mistakes, which I don't think Judas was going to allow himself to do, which he inevitably doesn't when he sadly takes his own life. I feel like that's the crux of his story. And we're no better, we're no worse than Judas. And there's no Judas in each one of us. I feel like there's a part of all of us with Judas. He's just as human as any of us, and he's his own greatest judger. And it's harder to look at oneself and maybe ask for forgiveness than it is to forgive someone. So I think the kinder eyes we show Judas might be the way we could kindly look on not only ourselves, but the people around us, so we can choose to grow together instead of, I don't know, collapse upon ourselves.
Matthew and Judas in this little pocket here.
The creator, Dallas Jenkins, created a show based on a source material that has been done several times over, like maybe overdone. We've got a musical, a TV show, a miniseries of stuff, and then a list from those aspects. I feel like if you had like a nickel for every film that was made about Jesus, you could probably fund the entire like Greek economy. It's unanimous, but he was able to create a project and a product that stood out and withstood the test of its expectations. And I think that's why everyone is flocking to it and why it has become so popular, because it's such a unique new and lively take on a story that everyone believes they know and thinks that they can like just take for granted. But the way he goes about it and he finds specific ideas and stories that you might not have been privy to, or the artistic liberties he takes in expanding on characters that are otherwise overlooked in the Bible, like Matthew, giving him an entire arc and giving him a position on the spectrum so we could connect to people who are on the spectrum here and see someone that they can relate to. That's, in my eyes, that's ingenious, and I think that's really what makes the show stand out. I think our normal fans would assume this, but for any new viewers or people who are watching more casually, I think they'd be surprised by how well we all get along with each other. It honestly still surprises me to this day, because I don't think I've ever been part of a project, whether it's theater, TV, or film, where I genuinely feel so close and connected to my fellow castmates, and it's withstood. It's, at least for me, ongoing 5 years now that these people have become my true blue friends, and I still talk to them like maybe once a week. It's great.
Over here.
Lands. You're the best friends.
Right now it's extremely hot in New York, and I stepped foot on, and I was like, oh, no, this is normal. It's another day on set. The heat is intense, the walking is a lot, but it's rewarding every shot and scene we take. I think we just ignore the heat. To a certain point, it's you're at the place of just bearing it or passing out. And so that a nice soft spot in the middle there, I think that's where we all just naturally land. Sometimes we fall to the ladder and we're like, oh no, we lost Jordan. Quick, someone fan him up and we'll get back to it. But hydration's very important. Electrolytes, pickle juice, to my dismay, everyone loves a good shot of pickle juice. It's very rejuvenating. Other than that, you keep calm and you carry on, you get through the heat. The hardest scenes are usually the ones where, due to schedule shifts, because a lot of our scenes are sometimes shot in exteriors, and exteriors sometimes are more privy to the weather than we're allowed for other things. So my hardest scenes are when, due to weather and schedule shifts, or if someone gets sick, or because we have a huge cast of people that we always have to be wary of, there'll be a schedule change and a scene that I had a week previous, where if you've seen the show, Judas likes to ramble. I think something that they maybe took from me after befriending and learning more about me, I'm pretty sure Dallas and the writers were like, oh yeah, let's make it more like Luke. Let's just have him talk endlessly. I was like, great. I'm glad that's something the character can get from me. So he'll have mountains of dialogue that I'll have to learn. For one example, season 4, one of the first scenes that Judas has is a scene of doing the laundry with Simon the Zealot. I thought I had like a day or two to fly in. As I was getting on the plane, they were like, hey, you're shooting tomorrow morning. And so I just had to pull up the scene, which was like paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of dialogue, and just get off book on the plane and then show up and pretend like I always knew it. So it's scenes like those, and they've happened occasionally some other times in the past 2 seasons. Those are the hardest, the surprise scenes, I like to call them, where it's like, oh, you thought you had a week of prep. In moments of panic like that, I realize, oh, there's no time to think. It's swim or sink. So I just swim, and by the time I get to shore, I don't think about the distance or how tired I am. I'm just like, I did it. We're good. Some of my favorite memories, playing Smash Bros. Behind the scenes of The Last Supper. Well, we're all at the table, and so depending on the shot and how long it takes, certain members of us, I brought my Switch onto the set, and so I just set it up, and we each took turns, depending on who was called to the table, to just rock out. Noah James, who plays Andrew, is famously a competitive Smash player. He bests all of us, no question. I think the most aggravating thing is he doesn't really take pleasure from a win. He only gets frustrated if he loses, so he'll beat you. And then he'll look at you with the most like empty eyes and just, again? The ending of season 4 was just a party scene. Like, it had been a long season, and we thought at that point, so many of us had such emotional arcs, and the entire season ended, a lot of us wrapped, with a party at Lazarus's house, and that was nice. I look back on that, I'm like, that's almost 2 years ago now, and I still remember the exact feeling that I felt then, now, which is just appreciation and gratitude that I got to share this with so many lovely people. In season three, I remember getting used to sitting down scenes in big rooms, and it's taking a week and it's hot and we have to get through the dialogue. I realized this was going to be my last time doing that with all of my disciple brothers. It was sweet, it was nostalgic, it was comforting, and I think getting to share that last moment with these guys that I've spent so much time with and I have gotten so close with was just, it was just really nice. It didn't matter that the room was extremely schwetzy or the humidity was kind of practically choking us at that point, and the chairs are always, always uncomfortable. No lumbar support, no cushions, it's just wood. That's the seating arrangement in the first century. But the fact that we were doing it together, I'm gonna miss it. I'm a very naturally rambunctious kid at heart. At 5 years old, I was just glued to the television, so acting seemed like the right course to take. Like, I was a performer at heart. I don't think anyone would want me, you know, conducting surgery on them or their loved ones, so this is probably the best for everyone. I just loved Jim Carrey. Right off the bat, the man was a human cartoon, which defied all my expectations and logic. So I glued on to him immediately, and I was like, "That's the guy. Let's friggin' go." Gene Wilder, also an extremely amazing someone who I found later on in life, and saw that his film career, although maybe not as unanimously popular as other comedic or fantastic actors, were so poignant and so amazing. I just loved his sincerity to chaos and his commitment to the natural reality of a situation, no matter how absurd, which would make it all the more funny. Like, he's fantastic. Robin Williams as well, who I always appreciate, and then after his passing I realized there was just this collection, this cornucopia of who this guy was, that he was unstoppable, like a constant engine of energy and thoughts and chaos. He taught me that it's okay to accept the weirdness that might sometimes be a bit off-putting, and if you can channel it, because I think mine was more like even now, sometimes people are like, "Oh, you're so quick." I'm like, no, I'm more of a shotgun, like spray and pray, but Robin exists as a constant North Star to me, as like, no, if you can focus that energy, if you can give it a point and turn that spray into like a sniper rifle of comedy, humor, and goodwill towards men, that's the way to work. And that's just a small list of just the array of amazing performers who, I mean, you'd assume maybe they're outsiders. I always felt like an outsider, another reason why I connected to Judas, but to use that energy for good, to entertain, to make people happy, and to just spread just good feelings and inspiration all around. That's the kind of performer that inspires me and makes me want to be. Or not to be? That is the question. I think my first big acting gig, I was very lucky, right out of my graduation of Performing Arts College in the spring of 2018, I was able to book a small talking part on the FX show Better Things, created by Pamela Adlon. I don't know how I got it. I remember showing up and not being on book for the size. I just happened to be the first one to audition. I was like, what are the odds? And then I got it. And Pamela, she was super kind, and it was crazy because I look back at it now and I'm like, oh, I'm acting opposite now Academy Award winner Mikey Madison, which is insane. It's cool to look back on now, but I think that's just the industry. You never know whose path is going to take you where or where things will coincide. It's just constantly growing. Yeah, that was my first thing. It got my managers to sign with me, and it was cool. I remember I was super nervous too. Like, I had memorized my lines and then the camera was on me and I just blanked. And Pamela looked at me and was like, first time. I was like, yes, is it obvious? Just full rusted, I couldn't move. But luckily I wore that rust off and I got back into it. And I'm in a scene in a TV show now. Well, now I'm in a lot of scenes in a lot more of a TV show. So I guess I naturally grew. I worked up that ladder.
No, but love is stupid. But you know what's stupider than love? The people who think they deserve love. This guy knows.
Improv is, it's like a Zen garden I always come back to. I started doing it in high school, and I'm so thankful for it because I was not funny. I was not funny as a kid. I think I was just loud, which could be confused for funny if you didn't know any better, which I didn't. So I was just going around as a kid being very loud. But eventually in high school, an upperclassman was like, hey, you seem like you've got a lot. Do you want to just come here? And he like took me by my lapels and just threw me into our comedy sports high school league. And from there, I learned timing, scene preparation, character, and just working naturally with other funny people made me funnier. And there's always times where it's like, oh no, it's been too long. Maybe I'm not good anymore. What am I? And then I'll go back, do a small scene at a theater that's like open, and I'll be like, oh, never mind, I needed this. This is good. It's good for the soul, or the comedic soul. It's a nice rebasing. So anytime, any chance I get, I always try to lean back on my comedic roots, because it's just freeing and it's fun. I guess for improvising, confidence is key. I feel like from improv, that's where I really learned it, and then it kind of translates to everything else, like acting, life in general. Because once you allow yourself to just kind of be stupid on stage and know that there is a chance for failure, and once you fail enough on that stage, you learn to be confident in yourself. That doesn't mean you need to get the biggest joke. You don't need to get like the biggest laugh. But once you're confident in yourself and you know what your abilities are, that's kind of all you need. Just unmitigated confidence, and then let the rest take care of itself. Right now, I don't know what's coming next. And that's kind of the crux of this job. You do one project and you wait to see what comes next. And as terrifying as that is, it's also kind of freeing because anything could be next. And to that, I can't wait to see what it is. I'm a huge comic book fan. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I know nowadays they've become these huge franchises, but growing up with them, even back then, I would have been happy just in any... No, that's not true, not in any role. If I was playing a stormtrooper in Star Wars, I'd probably like cry. And I don't mean to say this as like jumping on the bandwagon, but genuinely, those stories mean so much to me, and I love those kinds of modern mythos, bigger than life stories. So something like that. I'm also a huge fan of action. I don't know if Tom Cruise needs like a timeout from the Mission Impossible series, but I don't know, I could tag in. I think I meet the height requirement. I've got a lot of dreams, a lot of aspirations. So hopefully just one of them. I just want one, just one more from this. I think that'll be fine. But other than that, I'm doing all right. When I'm not working, I think that I work more. I found a new appreciation and love for writing. I always did writing as a hobby, and now it's becoming more prevalent as a way to create, and people are actually interested in some of my writing, so I'm enjoying that aspect of it. I'm always trying to come up with fun new ideas or see what small little improv or stage theaters I can go and participate with. I really do just love my craft. Funny enough, when I'm not working on TV, I really like consuming. I'll just watch whatever's coming on. A huge fan of Shrinking, the studio on Apple TV. And when I'm not doing that, playing video games, reading, spending time with my family, just relaxing mostly. I think the thing that inspires me creatively is to inspire or to escape. I think the art that always really excited me was stories or characters that made me think and that made me want to do or be more. Characters like Spider-Man, Superman, these idols, these epitomes of what it means to be good, to fight against your tribulations and to overcome them, not just for the sake of yourself, but for the sake of others. But also stories that made me yearn for something more and to escape like dreary hardships that sometimes are a bit overwhelming in the common sense that you're looking at right now and you think, is this my complete life? Is this all I'm meant for? And then you watch Dead Poets Society and you're like, no, life is beautiful and it's expansive and it's that way because we can make it that way and we can have fun. We can contribute a verse, any one of us can. And that's the kind of art that, I mean, I'd like to make, and it's the kind of art that I like to consume. The reasoning to live and to be human, that excitement, that's the one worth making. Don't be afraid to doubt yourself. I know how that sounds, face value, but growing up, I think I had such a strict view of what success was or what truth was or how things are. I learned that if I wanted to grow, if I wanted to learn something new, I had to doubt what I had already known. I had to question what I felt comfortable in for the possibility of a newer or better truth that I hadn't thought of before. And so knowing who I am, knowing the values that I share, I had to be brave and doubt myself. Doubt what I am right now so I could maybe find something better in the future or maybe two steps down the line that was right there that I hadn't considered before. So don't be afraid. Take courage in yourself and doubt, because you never know what you're gonna find just right outside your doorstep. And it was there the whole time. You just needed to open the door.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.